This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along. It's another Blue Monday special. We have another special guest, and I always say I'm not going to waffle along. Phil is here from TWTD, but you can see, well, I don't know, to my right or depending on which way you're looking, Amazon Prime's, although he didn't know it, Mr. Alan Lee. How you doing, Alan?
Hello there, guys. How are you?
No one had told you that you're a star on Amazon Prime of the Crystal Palace documentary.
Honestly, it's the first I've heard of it, but I'm sure I'm not the star. just a cameo.
Yeah, we get a pretty decent cameo at the start, stopping them from getting relegated. So, look, we're going to go through sort of your career, Alan, at Ipswich, and some bits before and after. And Phil's got lots of stuff on the after and the coaching and all of that good stuff. So we'll get into it the way we did with Kieran Dyer, because he gave a fascinating answer. From the horse's mouth, can you describe yourself as a player in your own words?
I was a traditional number nine. I was hardworking, competitive. I was strong in the air. I wasn't terrible with my feet, but you know, my strength wasn't coming short and twisting and turning. But I think I was a bit of a battler. I just wish I was playing football now rather than 10 years ago.
Why did you say that?
There's not many of us. Well, I think the game is, you know, everyone, although a lot of people are playing through the thirds, you know, everyone is still looking for that number nine, that target man, that second option, and it's we're not producing them as much. But you can do very well for yourself now if you can provide that outlet for a team.
Do you think, because there was sort of a sense that player had gone out of fashion, but big direct striker pretty much will never go out of fashion, will it? Until they ban heading.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen. it doesn't. I mean, so, like, even in, I've been involved in teams, and you pre-season goes on and everyone's stroking around, everything's quite nice, and you find yourself out of the team, and before you know it, you're on after 50 minutes, first game, right? We've got to make an impact here. It's a specialist position. There's obviously big physical specimens out there, but I think there's a lot more craft to it. I think there's a lot more specialist. It's more of a specialist position, and a lot of things you'll do as a number nine or as a target man is standing still, you know, and pulling away from where you want the ball, you know, pulling to the opposite side of the pitch, and using your body to pin centre halves and defenders. So it's, you know, I'm always, when I'm talking to young centre forwards or certainly strong ones, it's one of the biggest things. I think you're trying to jump with the centre half rather than pin him. And I think there's, you know, I learned a lot and got better. I got better at my trade over the years, but at the same time, my physical, my attributes, you lose your pace. You know, you have the injuries and you lose your physicality. You don't lose your strength, but you use that ability to get around the pitch.
Mm. Coming through at Villa, what sort of, talk to us about big names and how you honed your craft there.
Well, I remember Ron Atkinson coming to the house. I originally turned down the offer. We were living in Dublin. It was kind of my background and where we lived. There was no such thing as a professional footballer. I went to a rugby school, and so we'd no one to get any advice from, and we just assumed I was going to go finish school and go to university. Aston Villa offered me a contract. Mum, Dad turned it down, said, "You're mad, of course he's not leaving school." And then Ron Atkinson actually came to our house and blew Mum and Dad away, said, "Listen, you can sign for 4 years. He can come back at any time he wants. We'll give him an education over here." So off I went, completely naive, at 16.
I'm thinking Dwight York possibly there. Who was at the club?
Sorry, yeah. At the time, Mark Bosnich, Dwight York, you know, Steve Staunton, Paul McGrath, Andy Townsend, John Fashanu, just legends. And it was, you could tell Ron Atkinson, it was kind of that time in football. You know, I wouldn't say they're not as professional, let's say. We all know about Paul McGrath, but I just remember the Dalian Atkinson, didn't mention him. Oh. The characters, you had to be so tough to survive in that. You know, I wasn't part of that first team, don't get me wrong, but the characters were just amazing. But they were good players. They were, you know, Paul McGrath was absolutely, he never trained, arrived in on a match day. He'd have a rub during the week, but he'd arrive in with an aura on a match day, head fine, and he would just run the game. And you couldn't figure out, you know, what, you know, how he did it. I remember early days, like training with, every so often you'd get to train with them. I'll never forget Dalian Atkinson. I was, you know, my team, Dalian Atkinson was the opposition team. Dalian Atkinson got the ball, knocked it past me, and went 5 yards past me, knocking me over in the process with pace and power. And I remember feeling, I'm on a different planet to this guy. This, you know, how do I ever get to that? You know, it was awe-inspiring. But we, Brian Little took over. I spent my first year, as kids do, just turning up, not really working hard, thinking, right, the coach puts on a session, I go through the session, and my second year pretty much started the same way. And a coach came in, Tony McAndrew, really hard, tough Scotsman, and he was just on my case the whole time. And initially I thought, oh, he hates me, he doesn't like me, blaming the coach, this, that, and the other. And it wasn't until he took me off one time in my second year. He took me off after 20 minutes and didn't bollock me like he normally did. Said, "Sit down, son, well done," and ignored me. The next week I went home for an international. I got sent off. I could see the look in my parents' eyes, and I kind of realized I'm coming home back to Dublin a failure here. I've got to do something about it. And it wasn't until then that something clicked. Actually, I'm in a race, and I started going in early every single day and staying late every single day and asking the coach, will you do something? Will you sort my touch out? You know, I was a joker to that point. You know, I couldn't control the ball, you know, and I did that religiously. And two things happened. One, I got better. And two, everyone's attitude to me changed, and my own attitude as well. And you know, I can't say I kept that up, that level of dedication up to my career. Definitely not throughout my career, but you know, I knew when to knuckle down and how to get back on it. So it was a really good. I was very lucky, in my opinion, to have the people and the guidance I had, and indeed the instruction from my parents. You know, my parents weren't complaining to the coaches. They were saying, "You've got to do something about it."
Because your dad was a footballer, wasn't he?
Amateur level. He loved his football. So he grew up in the west of Ireland, middle of nowhere, listening to where the only access to English football was on long wave radio. And you know, if that was the time, probably in the '50s, the local priest would take the football off you if he saw you playing football. You know,
sounds like Father Ted.
It's exactly what it's like. And so he just loved, lived and breathed for football. But when we were growing up, he played football every day with me in the back garden. And sorry, you get me emotionally. Sadly, passed away a few years ago.
Yeah.
Way too young. So it's I owe him everything. Sorry.
Yeah, he was involved with Salt Hill Devon, I think, wasn't he? And the Galway Cup as well. So I can remember reading his name a few years ago.
Yeah, it was. So give you a bit of a backstory. Salt Hill Devon are like a grassroots club on the west coast of Ireland. And they have like a championship facility. So they've 4G pitches, loads of smaller AstroTurf pitches, 6 or 7 immaculate pitches. And they restarted in the 70s, and my dad was one of the founding members. And they've been really well run by people like Pete Kelly and Ollie Daniels. And what they did, they bought a plot of land. A builder had bought that land off them, built them more pitches. Then another builder offered them some more money for those pitches, and they turned into the most fantastic club. And they hold tournaments every year, which Ipswich have indeed played in. So it's kind of if you went and visited it, it's like this wonderful facility, middle of literally a bog on the coast of Ireland. And it's, yeah, so, yeah, again, I know my dad is very proud to play a little part in that.
Brilliant. So to get to the point where, because we could go forensically through Rotherham and through Cardiff as well. So you're with Ronnie Moore at Rotherham, and strangely, considering the size of the two clubs, Rotherham and Ipswich seem to have become rivals in the past three seasons. And then on to Cardiff, who were sort of establishing themselves at championship level at the same time as you sort of were. Is that fair?
I'd had a couple of seasons. I had a couple of really good seasons with Rotherham in the championship. And it got to the stage, it was time to move on. Signed for Cardiff, and it was definitely a club on the up. But at that point, we didn't even have a training ground. It probably sounds unusual to young players now. You know, that's things like that would happen. I mean, we train in the middle of an athletics track. It was awful pitch, but that was what they've wonderful facilities now. But that's what they had back then. I tried my best at Cardiff, but. Actually, I didn't start too badly, but I had a knee injury about 4 or 5 games in while away in Ireland duty. Medial meniscus tear, quite a serious injury. So they tried to repair that. The repair failed. So I had another operation to take your meniscus out, your cushioning in your knee. And at that stage, it's pretty embarrassing when you're at a new club and you're injured. I came back. And I was in pain playing, and I was never quite right. I was never quite fit enough, and I never really got going at Cardiff. You know, I had a good relationship with the fans, and the fans could see I could, you know, I was trying, but they never saw the best of me, and I was never fully fit, and never mentally in the right place either. But bizarrely, I'd played well against Ipswich the year before, and. Dave Jones had taken over at Cardiff, really nice guy, but I wasn't his first choice. And I got wind that Ipswich were in for me and Joe Royal. And I used to, at that stage, Ipswich had the best pitch you'd ever play on. And anytime you went there, whoever I went there with, I always loved playing there. And someone like Joe Royal coming to buy you, I felt, God, if I'd done really well at Cardiff, I might get a move to Ipswich. But, I've been really lucky here. I've not done well, but I've got an opportunity here. And just the minute I walked through the door, it just felt like I was home. And, Joe Royal was the perfect manager for me. I wanted to do well from him. So the kind of rest was history. You score a couple of goals when, in your first couple of games, makes things, everything easier for a centre forward. So I just felt at home.
Do you want to pick up there, Phil?
I remember the Southampton game. It was your second game, wasn't it? I think away at Southampton. I think goal really early on, and I think you make your name, don't you? And as a striker, getting goals in your second game is exactly what you want, isn't it? I think you presumably the pressure builds if you don't score early on.
Well, it shows the if I played a game at Southampton 2 weeks earlier for Cardiff, I probably would have been dragged after 60 minutes, huffed and puffed. I felt invincible that day for Ipswich. Again, I just the game could have continued for another 45 minutes, and I'd have kept running the channels and just this energy. I remember there was a corner with 5 minutes to go, and we kept everyone back, and I was in the middle, and I got to the ball first. There was just no way anyone was going to beat me to that ball, and that's the power of your mind. The difference between a confident player. Player with self-belief and one lacking it. It's amazing. Mm, mm.
And the knee wasn't impacting. I mean, I remember, you can tell me whether this is nonsense or not, but when you had your medical at Town, was there sort of an issue with your knee then? I remember someone telling me that they wouldn't insure you or something along those lines.
Yeah, once you've a piece of your meniscus removed, you're on a time bomb. It's funny, I saw the surgeon last week. I need a full knee replacement on that side, but we're going to try and put it off as long as possible. I have a lot of pain out of it, and it's bone on bone. So once you remove that meniscus, yeah, I was lucky. I played on an extra 10 years, which was doing really well. And initially it was sore, but I can't say it affected me that much the rest of my career till the very end. I had a spell at Huddersfield where I was struggling with it, but you know, once that meniscus goes, your days are numbered.
So you came into a side at that point. You got four goals in that half season, I think, with having joined in the January. It was a changing team, wasn't it? Because it was the team the year before with Shefki and Tommy Miller and Darren Bent and Kelvin Davis. They'd all been sold the previous summer, hadn't they? And you came in the January, really to sort of rescue the season. Because I don't think there were any real danger of relegation, but I think it was kind of, we were looking over our shoulders a bit at that point. And I thought you saw us to safety, didn't you?
I think everyone. I don't think it was quite that bad, but the place needed a lift. I'd had a good five or six games, but then there was a game in Crewe, and we'd actually were thinking we might still catch the playoffs. And I had a hamstring tweak, and Joe, I spoke to Joe beforehand about it, and we said, I don't think it's good. I think we could step out for a week and it would be fine. But I played, scored a goal, and then sure enough, the hamstring went. So it was kind of one of those risks that we thought, well, we might as well take it. But then I kind of missed. I got back for the end of the season. Going back to, I liked Suffolk. The dressing room is really good. There's some really solid customers, Jason DeVos, Jim McGilton. There were some wonderful players, Gavin Williams. I don't think Tommy Miller came back till the next year. I remember playing up front with John Mackin. I think, although that might have been the second year as well, Darren Curry, Fabian Wilnes. All good characters, no knobheads.
So you can ask for.
Yeah, and it was Joe was brilliant. He had a way of, like, I remember once, you know, I had a bad first half against Crystal Palace away, and Joe at half time, Joe just says his bits and pieces, and then he looks at me and he goes, "That's not you, Alan, is it? That's not real you, is it?" And I remember thinking, "No, no." And he just had this magic of knowing exactly what to say. At that moment, I'd have run through a brick wall from him. You know, I was going to go out for him second half because I wanted him to be proud of me. And it was a magical bit of man management. So huge respect for him.
I mean, I was going to say, what I always found about Joe when I was around the training ground, I went to interview him once, and I think I was going to go and do it in Miltz's office, but then at the training ground, but someone was using that office, and then he walked me through the building to the dressing rooms. But on the way, he had a word for everybody. Do you know what I mean? There was that table tennis room on the left, and he stuck his head in there, and there was some banter with whoever was in there. And it was just topping everybody up sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? Morale-wise, is that how you found it?
Yeah, he had a lot of class. He was intelligent and he had class and he didn't have an ego. You know, he'd done everything. He didn't need to prove. You know, so you very often you find people like that, they've got time for everyone. And, you know, it was a shame when he went. And I remember phoning him and, you know, I'd have loved him to stay on, but I only got to play with him for 6 months. I just wish it was a bit longer.
I was just thinking that you're kind of the prototypical Joe Royal striker. When you look back, even through Oldham and Man City, he always loved a big, powerful, direct, good running striker, didn't he? But what about the switch then from a elder statesman who, in your words, had done everything to one of your... what's the word we can use for Jim, Phil? One of your more self-confident teammates.
If ever there was a poacher turned gamekeeper, it was Jim.
I love that.
Jim is like, I remember actually Jim was kind of leaving the club. And I remember we'd had a night out end of season and we were kind of, certainly I was encouraging him. I said, like, you know, stay around, you'll be manager one day. And I didn't expect it to happen that quick. And it was like, it's funny because with Jim, by the end of it, we didn't get on. But I get why, and we're fine now. Do you know what I mean? I phone him up now, and I really want to see him do well. And I think he's done what he's done with Northern Ireland, is that's fantastic. But I think it's really hard if you've been, you know, if you've been on that side, to then, particularly with the older lads like me, Fabian, Daz, you know, we'd shared everything. Do you know what I mean? We knew about the nights out. We, you know, it's hard then to become the manager of that. So I get why probably it got testing at times. But listen, we had a really good, I think, second season. Our first season was a bit challenging. But I loved it. I think towards the end, I think we went on a run that took us away from a bit of danger. But again, I think we signed Gary Roberts. He's just a lovely guy. He was up front. Pablo came back. I mean, Pablo Canago, what a player. And the two of us just, that might have been the season afterwards. Yeah, it was the season afterwards, wasn't it? John Mackin. So we huffed and puffed that year.
Yeah, you were 14th, I think. And but you scored 17.
Yeah, I scored 17. Scored my first hat-trick.
Yeah.
And, that was probably my best season goals return I've ever had. But as Jim would tell me, I should have had 20-odd more. Right? But there you go. He was right.
There was 2 years, weren't there, where one was home form was fantastic and the next year the away form was fantastic. It was much better.
I remember the year. I think it was the second year, and if we'd had an extra point, we'd have been in the playoffs. And, you know, and I think – but, you know, looking back, we, you know, I know I spoke to Andy Rhodes about that recently, and he was saying maybe we should go – do something completely different and go long ball, or, you know, anything away from home to get that point. You know, maybe we should have mixed it up a bit more. But kind of around that, you know, I think Marcus Evans had taken over, and things, you just got a sense things were starting to change.
Well, I was going to come to that. Yeah, it was December 2007, wasn't it, that Marcus Evans came in, and suddenly money from because Jim had been operating on a shoestring budget, hadn't he? And suddenly there was money to play with, and that January, I think there was about 14 signings, weren't there?
Yeah, I think it almost muddied the water a bit, because before that we knew, you know, no one was on an obscene amount of money more than someone else.
Yeah.
We had to get along. There was such a focus on team spirit and in this together. I felt that slightly changed. I know we signed one or two and the lads got to find out, you know, what the signing on fees were, and it just created a little bit of, when you're that player coming in, then you've got to do well. You've got to be that much better than the other players. And the signings didn't really work out that way. So it kind of, and it was a shame in the end, because it was a shame for Jim the way it ended, because he didn't do a bad job. Really.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
As you say, that was 2007-8, wasn't it? That's right. That was the season where, as you say, one home record, 115, drew 7, lost 1. Remarkably good home record, but away only won 3 games. And missed out on the playoffs in the final day. So against Hull City, tough to take, really. I imagine, but when it's 1 point, I think on the final day you scored a goal, didn't you?
Yeah, I came off the bench. And scored a header, I think, with my second touch.
Oh,
and there was kind of a moment there where we thought, oh, we've got a chance here.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful moment, you know, full house. But at that stage, I'd kind of just started getting the feeling that, you know, I was surplus to requirements. I turned down a move to Hull. I could have, you know, to be fair, I put my money where my mouth is. I turned down a move, which doubled my money. I said, I just don't want to do it. I want to stay here. And that was, you know, that was a few months previously. And then we'd signed new players who weren't really making an impact, but I wasn't being offered a new deal. And it kind of got to the stage where I knew Crystal Palace came in for me, and there was a couple of other clubs. And I thought, you know, for my own sake now, the music's going to stop here. I need to grab myself a chair. I was really gutted to leave, like genuinely gutted. And I wasn't in, when I first went to Palace, I wasn't in the right frame of mind, because, you know, I didn't really want to leave.
But it was just the circumstances as it was that you felt the club was growing away from you in a way.
I felt, you know, I think I could have, again, there seemed to be this, I think when you're, after a couple of years, people start looking at you and saying, well, what you can't do rather than what you can do and what positive you bring. So I felt, you know, that was where people had got with me in their opinion. But I think they suffered for it. I think, you know, I'd have continued to be an asset, and I don't think they replaced me probably till Daryl Murphy.
No, out and out similar striker. Yeah, I agree with you. We have to. You mentioned sort of not getting on with Jim terribly well. There's the Amsterdam trip, which I think was a bit of a storm in a teacup, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, that's exactly. I think in the scheme of things now, but part of the problem was I know that the year before Jim had done similar himself, not to Amsterdam. I think he'd gone to Edinburgh, and like, you know, so we went away in the Monday night after a game and got back. We Tuesday, Wednesday off, and we came back Wednesday lunchtime. And kind of everyone knew people had been going to Ireland and all over the place. And, you know, nowadays you go to, the difference is you go to Dubai or something. But we had, there was some sort of incident. Me and Fabian just went to the hotel bar first night, but Gavin Williams and the young scallywags were obviously all on the streets. Anyway, they pay someone, they want bikes. So they buy some bikes off some guys on the streets. 30 euros each or something. And they're cycling around. Next thing, the police stop them. Go, listen, English, but well, right, you've not brought bikes with you. You know, we want to know. Oh, no, hold on. We've got, you know, as the story goes, they were arrested. But they didn't. They brought the police back to the guys they bought the bikes from and said, no, they bought them, and the police let them off and away. Anyway, this turned into a massive story. The lads couldn't keep their mouths shut about us. And by the end of it, we were all arrested. So anyway, the press got hold of us, and it was just kind of all of a sudden we were being punished for going away. So it wasn't best handled by the club, I have to say. But on the other hand, there was no harm done. And again, I think when you see some of the stuff that happens now, it was pretty pantomime.
Yeah, and these days, of course, you'd have photographs all over social media while it was actually happening.
I'd hate to be, you know, under that looking glass now.
I've got to ask, because I'll get strung up if not, because you've done something that probably every single Ipswich Town fan would, if they could be in one place at one time in front of a certain stand in a certain stadium in a certain local derby. So how to ingratiate yourself and win brownie points is score at the Barclay End at Norwich. And we still remember Danny Haynes doing it, and strangely Jonas Knudsen a few times. Just talk to me about that goal, because you often talk to footballers and they're like, well, look, it's my job, it's another game, but you must know what that means to the fans.
Yeah, listen, I know what it means. I'd celebrate every goal like it's my last, but you there's goals you score that obviously any playing against Norwich, there's so much added extra on it. You know, now I used to love love the full houses, you know, and the noise, everything, the din, deafening. But that moment when you've scored and you're running away, honestly, you feel, you feel you could win the Olympic 100 meters. You know, you feel so strong. You feel so elated, whatever drug that goes through your system. That's why I never could arrange a celebration, because you go bananas. You're just there. And my thing was, I've been punching, you catch someone in the crowd and you're in the air and you just feel so wonderful. And that's the, you know, that's something that money cannot buy. You cannot replicate that. There's no way of replicating that apart from doing something special in sports. And I'm not sure there's anything that compares to football and scoring a goal against your local rivals, and the goal counts. You know, so I think it was to put us ahead. But I look back on that goal and what a touch from Pablo and pass in behind. I mean, it was just magical. I couldn't miss. So it was a great feeling.
Pablo was rather modest there. Sorry, Phil.
I was going to say about Pablo. I mean, he was a terrific player. He really probably should have played at a higher level, shouldn't he?
Yeah, he had the ability. He You know, I think clubs were looking at him. We struck up a good partnership. I wouldn't say we were close friends or anything. but he was, we had an understanding on the pitch, and if there was space running behind, that would be me. And then he'd start high, drop into a hole, twist and turn, and you know we'd probably find a way to get through to you. So we complemented each other so well. Yeah, huge admiration for him.
So is he the sort of strike, your favourite strike partner through your career? Because you've had, and you've had different sorts of strike partners. I can remember you telling me about, I can't think who it was, your strike partner at Rotherham. But it was a slightly different partnership, wasn't it?
I played with Jordan Rhodes a lot at Huddersfield. Right, and that was probably as close to, Pablo.
Earnshaw?
Robert Earnshaw. Yeah, I played with Ernie. Again, I wouldn't say I was at my best or I was a great foil for him. Rotherham was kind of mixed up. He used to play a bit with Richie Barker, a lovely guy. And we were two target men, but we'd work, whenever we played together, we'd work really well. Let me see. John Mackin was a really intelligent footballer. And again, he'd drop into the hole a bit more. Franny Jeffers, really clever player. Yeah, I think Pablo and Jordan Rhodes were my favourite to play with.
So there's this crazy season where when I tried to write it down, and I didn't think you could play for three teams in a season. I thought there was rules against this. But so in 2008, 2009, you start at Ipswich, who you score for. You go to Palace and then score against Ipswich. You go on loan to Norwich, and then you're playing for Norwich against Ipswich at the end of the season. And then you score in the last game of the season for Norwich, who are then relegated. What? Yeah. Any stability there at all?
Yeah, pretty mad. Well, I went to Palace, got injured in my first session, pulled a hamstring. The physio had been doing these mad strength tests on a machine, and I'd obviously tweaked my hammy. It wasn't diagnosed right, and I'd torn it three times before, I tore it another two times. So it was so embarrassing, horrible. Got back into the team eventually, but was just, head was all over the place, half living in London, not living right. My fiance, we weren't engaged then, but my girlfriend was living back in Suffolk, and I just hated every moment of it. And Gunny had got the job at Norwich and asked if I wanted to go on loan. And Neil Warnock was good as gold about it. Said, listen, no hard feelings, but, you get to go back home and everything. And I went back, I know upset Ipswich fans and all that, but I'm a professional. I needed to go back. I needed to be back at home. I needed to go back to Dedham, not be travelling in and out in London, just be settled. It was the best thing for me. So I went to Norwich. I actually, we got relegated, but they gave me player of the month, and it took me, bizarrely.
You're still thinking about the bad news, yeah?
But the first game, they weren't doing well. They had a load of loan players. They just weren't at it. And I'd put it about a couple of games, and I did well. I played really well for them. And by the end of it, they were quite appreciative. And I'd have signed there, if I could have, but it wasn't to be. Go back to Crystal Palace, and, Neil Warnock's not made it personal, but he just wants me out the door. I kind of half do pre-season. I wasn't even meant to go on the end of season, the pre-season tour, but I ended up going on it late. And I was actually doing all right all of a sudden. I was injury free. First game of the season, Stern John goes off with a broken arm. I come on and score the winner. And it was, it was funny. And I'll give you an insight into Neil Warnock. So I'm starting the next couple of games and I'm doing quite well. But he takes me off at half time. No explanation. And I thought I'd done all right in the first half. We're losing 1-0. Doesn't say anything to me. And I go back. I was living, we had an agreement. I could live back in Suffolk and travel up for training and back again. And he pulled me off and he goes, where were you Friday night? I go to see him Monday morning. where were you Friday night? Well, I was in a flat in London. Why were you in London? I said, were you saying that? I wasn't out or anything. No, no, I know you weren't out, but why were you in London? I said, I saw your car in the car park, and I said, well, Gaffer, you said I could live at home during the week, but it's a 3-hour drive on a match day. You don't want me doing that, surely? He goes, No. He said, I was wrong to take you off, but I thought you'd gone to London, and I forget, get different energy from me from London, if you come in from London. So I want you to drive in. I don't care if you're late. If you're late, just phone me and tell me, fine, no problem. He said, I want you to drive in from Suffolk for games as well. But it was brilliant because very often, if you have a long drive, it's not the drive itself. It's the fact that you might be late makes you anxious. But I was driving in, I'd leave early, I'd have some lunch at the ground for 12, and I actually quite liked the arrangement. But it was something Neil Warnock had seen, and he said, you've got to be coming into the countryside, settled, at home, and you're a better player and a better person when you do that.
That's interesting. And he was right. Element of his man management. Again, someone else Kieran has spoken before, I think, about Neil Warnock's man management and how he found that so sort of... impressive. Huddersfield next. That was your next club, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I suppose my last club proper, I suppose. I'd started. We obviously people know about the season at Crystal Palace. I'd just my favourite season in football that year.
Oh yeah.
And we stayed up on the last day of the season, and it was just magical. Apparently, you can watch a documentary on it.
Tell us about that season.
Well, we were in the playoff positions after about 10, 12 games. Forgive me if I get the dates wrong. But anyway, we were flying up to Newcastle for a game against Newcastle United. We get off the planes and we've been told, we get our messages that we're gone into administration. We got 10-point deduction, which put us like fourth and bottom, like sixth to, you know, or thereabouts to, right, now we're in a relegation fight. We lost. As we joke, we sold all our good players, like Jose Fonte, Nathaniel Klein. Oh God, who's the guy who went to Wigan and Chelsea? Victor Moses. How could I forget Victor Moses?
Great player.
But what we were left behind was really just unbelievable characters. So Clint Hill, Sean Derry, Paddy McCarthy, Danny Butterfield. And we'd an absolute class player, Darren Ambrose, on the left, playing on the left of me. And we all just knew our jobs. Everyone just dug in. I mean, Paddy McCarthy's shoulder must have popped out about 5 or 6 times, but he kept playing. It was astonishing, but we didn't do too bad. We probably in the championship, if you have a bad run of 10 games and then you've an average run, you'll be down in the bottom. If you can have 10 good games and the rest of the season average, you'll probably be up near the top. So it can make such a difference, a deduction of 10 points. So we were going into the last game of the season. The fans were behind us because they'd tell we were giving our all. We didn't deserve to be in there. We're playing Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough. If we drew or won, we stayed up. If they won, they stayed up. So I've never seen a crowd like it or the amount of... I mean, there was television stations from all over the world there. The car park was full of, like, the TV satellite trucks. And kind of, yeah, you know, the nerves, the nervous adrenaline. But as it happened, quite early on, Darren Ambrose put great corner on a plate. Rose stuck into the back of the net, ran Darren over in my celebration, nearly knocked him out. and we just dug in, and, you know, they equalized. We scored another, Darren Ambrose scored, they scored one, and then I was done with about 10 minutes ago. I was absolutely shattered, and they took me off. And I mean, watching that game, those last 6 or 7 minutes of time added on, it was just It just felt like an eternity. But we drew and we stayed up, and the fans, there was a pitch invasion. It was just such, so emotional. I've never experienced anything quite like it. But for me, it was weird. I just burst out crying. You know, I was so proud of what we'd done and what this group of players had done and people. And so I didn't even go out for the celebration that night. I remember just crying in the corner of the dressing room, really content, peaceful feeling, and just drove home that night and had a couple of pints, I think, in the Sun Inn in Dedham. It was a huge achievement.
So we come on to Huddersfield then, your time there with Jordan Rhodes, as you say. I think Tommy Miller was with you there as well, wasn't he?
Tommy was there, yeah. Lee Clark was there, and he had a fantastic few years, but he just signed people on their character and the type of characters. So we had the owner was making a big push. You know, eventually they got to the Premiership, but we just had the best bunch of lads. No one was big time, no knobheads. Everyone went out together. Everyone was prepared to work hard. We went 40-odd games unbeaten across two seasons. But we didn't get it done first year, which is a big disappointment. We didn't turn up for the playoff final. And, you know, it was a huge regret and such a shame. But I think the pressure got to us. And we didn't prepare right for the final, and Peterborough did us. Next season, we continued the run on, got to the playoffs. Simon Grayson come in and taken over from Lee Clark. We had the playoff final, and I was a sub. I was injured. My knee was twice as big as it should be. And we'd penalty shootout.
I was there. I was,
yeah. I remember two days before, I thought, God, I can just see it now. I don't feel right. I shouldn't be playing. And I bet this goes to penalties and I'll have to take one. And I had a really negative feeling. That's just not me. So on the day, it's nil all. It's the hottest day at Wembley. Tommy Miller steps up. A banker normally misses his penalty. They score. Damien Johnson steps up, misses his penalty. They score. In some bizarre logic in my head, I thought, right, all I have to do is hit the target. This will go in. I've never seen, no one saves three in a row. And I hit like the most awful penalty. They save it. And that walk back, and you feel, you know, that moment, I said, right, I've decided. I've let 40,000 people down here today, my teammates. We've not achieved what we were paid to do. I'm going to go in and I'm going to forego the last year of my contract and just quit. I'm out of it. I can't. This, you know, I felt so low, because there's no way on earth we're getting back from that. And somehow they miss their next three. We score our next two, and it goes all the way to the keepers, and it's decided. And I was so lucky. As Gary Roberts said, We decided to get all our worst penalty takers out of the way early. we got promoted. Next season, started okay. I was kind of a sub. I was struggling with my knee. You know, I was on my way out then. You know, I could come on, make an impression from the bench, but I was, I couldn't train every day. I had to do a lot of cycling. And as well, we'd signed some characters that wasn't quite the same. Went on a really bad run. Simon Grayson was sacked. Mark Robbins, who I'd played with, came in and kind of like immediately bombed me out and said, listen, you're not going to be involved. And, you know, thanks, Al. And I said, oh, okay. But, I did things right. But then he started well, and then went on a bad run, and then phoned me up one night and said, Alan, listen, need to use you here. Just thinking if we could, you know, get you back involved and maybe get you on the bench and all this. And I was like, Robbo, I'm still training every day. I'm, you know, I'm doing everything right. I've not changed the way I've been, but you know, I'll come back and be professional. But we managed to stay up. Got messed around a little bit with the contract. You know, I think the chairman had wanted me to stay on. Mark Robbins had said, "Oh yeah, we'll sort all that out." Day after the season went, he goes, "Listen, Al, we're not going to offer you anything." And it just felt a little bit of a sour note. But we just had our first child, Eva. And at that stage, unfortunately, we knew Dad was dying, and he was living in Dedham. And kind of just, there was so much going on in my personal life. I thought, let's move back in with your mum. Let's just get home. You go now, take the baby. I'll pack up the house in Huddersfield. And like that, you go from being settled, expecting another year, to back home living in my mother-in-law's. So it was a really disruptive time, you know, really tough time. But I remember I'd started my coaching badges the year before, but I needed some hours coaching, and I'd asked Brian Clough if I could come into the academy. And it must have been late July, and I was doing a bit with a young team. You know, I didn't know what I was doing, basically, but Mick and Terry Connor were at the pitch beside us. So when I was finished, I walked over to Mick and I said, listen, Mick, thank you very much for letting me come in, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes, "Well, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, it looks like I'm retired." And he goes, "Well, have you been keeping fit?" And I lied and said, "Yes, yeah." He goes, "Listen, why don't you come in, train tomorrow and play a reserve team game?" He said, there won't be a position here as a player, but we just need some good people around and you might fit. So I came, scored in the 23s game the next day, and ended up signing as like a player coach.
Thanks for watching or listening to the Blue Monday podcast. And thanks to those of you who have kindly supported the channel via Acast or YouTube donations. You can follow us at the usual places on social media, and don't forget to subscribe so that you get our new shows first.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.